All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. I got to check the volume here. It's way too loud at the moment. Along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Still have to fix the levels here. All right, there we go. That's much better. So we're going to be talking some silly stuff tonight, I guess. There aren't many, there aren't any high school scores to report on at the moment. Both Hamilton, Wenham, and Linfield have postponed all of their athletic events for today until tomorrow. And I guess that's reasonable enough. Tim, have you been out in this weather?
Only to get between the truck and school and the school to my truck.
Yeah, the wind was pretty...
And I went shopping this afternoon, and as I came out of the market, and I was loading up my truck, all of a sudden the skies opened again, and
Well, I am not running at the moment, so I have all my foul weather gear, and I went out for a walk. I don't care what it's like unless it's sleeting or it's ice out there. I'll go. And I did my usual circuit, but there were a couple of times when the wind gust just absolutely stopped me in my tracks or blew me sideways. And it was like, damn, this is that's got to be 50, 60 mile an hour. They set up in, Rockport? They had a 78 mile an hour wind gust, I think it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Channel 5 said that. So, anyway, it's winding down now, thank goodness, but it did have its effect on schools. And again, both Ham.
I was today, and it was early afternoon, and all of a sudden the power went out, and then it came back on, and then it went out, and it came back on, and then it went out, and it came back on. So, there must have been transformers going all over the area.
Yeah, I didn't see, in my travels, I didn't see many National Grid trucks around on Cape Ann. So maybe it's not too bad on Cape Ann, hopefully. But, you know, the temperature was warm, which is kind of unusual for December 18 to get a major storm, and it's warm like this. So,
and I'm in near mid-50s.
Yeah, could have been a whole lot worse. We're actually at 58. Well, now it's dropped down to 54, but we got up to 58 at our house in Gloucester.
Yeah.
All right, so what's on your sports mind? We're going to talk, first of all, we're going to get hold of Mike Grenier later on in the hour, our usual basketball insider and sports writer. Another sports writer, Steve Krause, will be with us hopefully in a few minutes. And the assignment for this particular session will be to talk about your favorite manager of a professional sports team or coach of a professional sports team not affiliated with Boston Professional Sports. So we'll see where that takes us. And the Bruins playing kind of up and down right now. The Celtics looking really good. And, well, of course, Mike Grenier will talk, I'm sure, about the Celtics later on as well. What's on your mind, Tim? Red Sox, again, AA, AAA, that's all we got so far.
Yeah, no one's even talking about the Red Sox until something major happens, and I'm not even sure. It seems like it's going to happen. Our new general manager seems to be a bit gun-shy in terms of making moves for fear of making a wrong move. We hear about them being in contention for all these players, big contract players, Japanese pitchers, but, you know, they're interested. Well, they may make a bid. Well, you know, come back and tell me when you've done something. You know, because otherwise it gets really tired of reading those same stories. You know.
Well, I think the thing is,
and you know, that they've lost some characters from the team from the past couple of years, and you know they were good players, and you know they made trades and didn't get a whole lot back for them. So that's disconcerting.
I don't think it makes any sense, though, to me, Tim, for the gazillions of dollars that this team has and their investments and their you know, the financial top of the heap there in their business pyramid, whatever it is. You know, they're talking about all the sports writers. Well, we're waiting to see what Yamamoto is going to do. So what? Go out and get the other stuff now. And if Yamamoto, you know, agrees to you, great. But why wait? I don't get it. You know, they're waiting for one guy when they could be stocking up somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I think that they've set a budget for themselves that they're not telling anybody. And Yamamoto's going to eat into a whole lot of it. And they don't know how much money they're going to have left, and if they start money, that they may not have enough money left to sign him if they get into the sweepstakes for him. So it's like, who knows? And, you know, frankly, the last place finishes, the last few years, and unfortunately, if you think about it, Rick, who do they most remind you of on the Boston sports scene?
Who do the Red Sox remind me of?
Yeah, they're turning into, or the Patriots are turning into the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah.
The Red Sox
they're
not winning. You know, they're placing in the division. You can't win from last place. There's no real improvement in the overall quality of the talent level, you know, in key positions like your quarterback, your pitchers. They're god awful, you know. And the better players have either left or they're trading them. So it's like, okay, thank God. You know, we haven't said this for 20 years, Rick. Thank God for the Celtics and the Bruins.
Well, that's true.
We have not said that for 20 years because the Red Sox have been so good, the Pats have been so good, and the Bruins and the Celtics have played second fiddle, even though they both won championships. So is everybody else. So it's like, the Bruins won. Oh yeah, the Celtics won. They won one apiece. The Red Sox and the Patriots won multiple. So we're always talking about those guys.
I just think, well, you got maybe 10 more weeks till spring training, and this roster, once again, it's insulting, to tell you the truth, that they come out and tell you what they're going to do. This for the third or fourth year in a row now, and what they do is they field a Triple-A team. And it's no disrespect to the athletes, because the athletes are trying to climb their way up, do the best they can. Some of them aren't ready. Some of them maybe will never be ready. But they're not fielding a major league team, and they haven't for how many years now? I mean, it's the third year in a row that they finished last place or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. That's that. We will be talking some good stuff with Mike Grenier later on, I'm sure, about the Celtics. And the Hot Stove League hasn't been so hot so far this... Well, it's not really...
It's going to be a lot of cold... cold wood chips in that particular so what is it, Rick? What is there to talk about? Who is there to talk about?
For the Red Sox?
On the Red Sox. Who is there to talk about?
I tell you what gives me hope. Okay, the guys that give me hope, and I feel like I'm back being 10 years old when I was rooting for Don Schwall and Chuck Schilling and guys like that.
They were bigger names than any of the Red Sox.
Right. Well, but I'm looking, because I used to look at the statistics in the Sporting News every week or the Baseball Digest, whatever the heck it was. I think it was the Sporting News. And they had all the minor league teams and so on. And I'm looking at, in particular, Tristan Casas. I think, you know, he gives me hope. Devers is good. Not great, but good. That's it. What's that?
Every time he turns around, they're dumping him somewhere.
Say it again.
You know, they're looking to dump him every other week.
I know. But I look at those two guys and I think, okay, these guys are pretty good. And Duran had a great season while he was healthy. He was a really pleasant surprise and fun to watch.
Well, you said the magic word, Rick. Healthy.
Yeah,
for the same time. You got to be there, you know, over the course of the entire season, over the course of half a season.
Yeah. All right, well, that takes care of that. Coming up, we'll be talking with Steve Krause here in a bit, going to get his take and Tim's take on their favorite coaches or managers. I actually, at first, struggled to come up with one, and then all of a sudden I came up with four that popped into my head. So we'll see if any of those guys, including Mike Grenier, have any of the ones that I chose. So we'll take a break, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed here that I engineered this thing correctly. Tim used to do it for me, but now we're all working remotely. And so let's take a break. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we bring back Steve Krauss now. Haven't seen Steve in probably 24 hours or so. Steve, how you doing?
Very good, Rick. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good. We're kicking
and
around.
How are you?
I'm good. Listen, Steve, want to thank you, but especially your wife, for inviting Rick and I to the Yesterday Soiree celebrating your retirement from the sports pages officially, and the celebration of your 70th birthday. What day? What day in August is your birthday?
29th.
That's my son's.
Older than you by a week.
Oh, now, yeah, it's you who's older. That's fine.
Yeah. My son is August 29 as well. So that's.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, that's. Right. I didn't know that. That's awesome. All right, Steve. we're trying to talk good stuff here and happy times and happy talk. Which means we're leaving out the Red Sox and the Patriots. But I want to start with, and I just told Tim this, when I first thought about who my favorite coach or manager is, or you know, more than one, not affiliated with Boston sports, I had to think for a while. But then all of a sudden, four names just piled into my head. So let's start with you. Who is, a favorite or two not affiliated with Boston sports?
Well, I got to say, the first two that come to mind, one of them, I just loved him. I covered him for whenever the Baltimore Orioles came to town, and I just loved covering the Orioles, and I loved covering Earl Weaver. I loved going to Red Sox Baltimore games and seeing Earl Weaver. I loved watching him get into fights with umpires and get thrown out of games, and I loved talking to him after games too, because he was a he was the antithesis of a certain unmentionable coach who, if you asked him a question, he'd give you an honest answer, and he wouldn't be surly about it or anything else. He was just a good guy to deal with, and, you know, he left all of his hostility with umpires out on the field. And, I mean, not for anything, but he wasn't a bad manager either. You know, they won, what, three pennants in a row, and they were always in a race. And I loved his little remarks about crawling out of more coffins than Bela Lugosi, you know, and things like that. I liked Earl Weaver, and sad day for me when he retired, because the Orioles became boring again, which is one thing they never were with Earl Weaver, was boring. And I guess the other one's a little bit more traditional, and I think he's probably got everybody's favorite coach, and that was Vince Lombardi. You know, you couldn't go wrong with Vince Lombardi. He was a good coach. Teams always played well. But he was another guy, you know, that he didn't mind answering a question if you asked it. And look at all the players that, I mean, I think in my life, the Packers might have been the first of those kinds of teams, you know, when you knew everybody on the team, and they almost took on a mythical status. Hmm. And it was all because of him. And I'd say he and Lombardi and Earl Weaver would be mine. And with a Sparky Anderson being a strong
favorite.
Sparky Anderson was great. He was another one. He was just, you couldn't shut him up. You know, he just, yeah, he bragged a lot, you know, and he talked about how Don Gullett was going to go to the Hall of Fame, which resulted in one of Bill Lee's best quotes ever, when he said, "Sparky Anderson's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I'm going to the Elliott Lounge." You know.
Tim, what's your thoughts? Reaction?
I like the Elliott Lounge. Well, I have to tell you, Steve, you're a baseball guy, my baseball guy. I actually put you down. Earl Weaver was the first guy I came to. He was colorful. No one ripped a hat off their head the way that he did. He had a flair. and his running to the plate to accost the home plate umpire.
He was great. Yeah,
was just classic. But I had Earl because he was all about the passion of the game, you know. And the other guy that I put in baseball was, and he was a general. I always thought this guy just oozes class, and you never seem to see him get upset in the dugout or charge out of the dugout or rant or rave. And that was Walter Alston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Saw them that much because they were the Dodgers, and we didn't have them on TV that much unless you watched NBC baseball on Saturday afternoons. But he always just epitomized to me, you know, the classic, classy manager. I mean, he would have looked good being in the dugout in a suit. He would have fit that year when managers wore suits.
Hmm.
You know? For football, I went with another guy of the time frame of Vince, but I picked Bud Grant.
Oh, yeah.
Bud was like,
okay.
You know, he took losing four Super Bowls as well as anybody ever could imagine. think of it. Bill Belichick has lost three Super Bowls, and no one gives him any shit about it because he won six.
So that's why. But Bud Grant didn't win any.
I guess you can afford to lose three if you've won twice as many.
Not to mention the fact that he lost a Super Bowl to Joe Capp. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Joe Capp was, well, let's just say he was nothing special. So
he was the guy that just, he was tougher than half of the defensive linemen that he played against, you know? And he was willing to stand there, take a beating, sling it down the field, and hope something good happened.
Well, I mean, he certainly—that's what he did against the Kansas City Chiefs. Took a beating.
Yeah. But I just thought the first guys. I'm thinking, who were some of the guys that epitomized class within this one? And Bud Grant again, stoic and. Stood there, and you can see that mind of his underneath that hat just constantly going, trying to figure out a way to win a Super Bowl. He won a lot of games. Great players underneath him.
Actually, those that knew him said he was a pretty funny guy. He just didn't show it in public. I liked Parcells. I liked Bill Parcells. He's a wise guy, but I liked him.
Well, I'd be a wise guy, but in a way, too full of himself. Now, basketball.
These guys are larger than life mostly anyway, so why wouldn't they be full of themselves?
Well, thank God for it's wide right, or he wouldn't have won a second Super Bowl.
This is true. Speaking of guys that had a lot of class, Marv Levy, Marv Levy seemed like a pretty even keel kind of a guy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be a little bit provincial here and say one of my favorite NFL coaches was Richard Gerron.
Okay. Yes.
How can you not like the guy? When he got fired from the Bears, he said, "Up until today, I had to talk to you. Now I don't, so goodbye." that's pretty good, I also like Coughlin, believe it or not. I love Tom Coughlin. When the Giants fired him, he had to give his farewell press conference. And then Mara gets up and speaks, the owner. Coughlin walks off the podium and out the room without once ever even looking at and acknowledging Mara.
Mm.
That's pretty good.
What's your interaction with Earl Weaver, Steve? Mike was covering some of the professional sports in Boston during the day. when you could get individual interviews. You can't do that now, but I'm guessing your interviews will probably like post-game stuff with everybody in the room.
Yeah, and they were always up because, you know, for a lot of my career, I was working with UPI, and you had to dictate a lead, and you had to dictate a box, so that a box score. So by the time you finally got down to the locker rooms, everybody had already gone and done their stuff, and you'd walk in there, and you'd be the only person in there. And you know, I was a kid. I was 20, 21, and I'm walking into the Greater Weaver's office. You know, my knees are knocking. And I asked him a question, and, you know, he treated a 20-year-old like he treated a 40-year-old. I mean, that was just the kind of guy he was. You ask him a question, he answered the question. And what I liked about him in those days as opposed to now is that you could get a dialogue going with some of these guys, you know, and Weaver would be one of those guys. You know, you might ask him about a piece of strategy or something that he, a decision, and that leads to something else, which leads to something else. And the next thing you know, you're sitting on the couch talking in his office talking baseball with him. You know, you're not just firing questions.
Mm-hmm.
You're just actually having a talk about baseball, which, you know, any baseball fan, which I know you are, Tim, any baseball fan, part of what makes baseball is how easy it is to talk about the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and here I am with Earl Weaver, you know. Earl effing Weaver, as we like to say, you know. And I'm sitting there talking baseball with him. I mean, God almighty, that was, for a kid my age at the time, which was 2021, that was like going to heaven, you know. And another guy that was like that was Ralph Houk. You know, you just go in there and start talking, and he was just eternally civil, you know. Joe Morgan, same thing, eternally civil. You know, you could always have a good convo with him, too.
Wow, and wow.
Some of these guys, you could, they wouldn't tell you if you were on fire. But, you know, some of the other ones, they went out of their way to be good to you. And, of course, they understood the ethic. If you go to the writers, I mean, reasonably good. If you go to the writers, you know, they're not going to be so prone to kick the heck out of you, you know?
Yeah, I guess Shaughnessy has to learn that lesson, huh?
he's mellowed, I think.
I guess. But you know what? I give him credit, and this is off the topic, but I give him credit because he will then, if he writes a critical story, he'll still go face-to-face with his subject, and that takes some courage, which the radio announcers don't do.
Yeah, a lot of the writers don't do that either. If they hammer somebody, you don't see them around there for a few days.
Well, I got to give Shaughnessy.
Shaughnessy's there the next day.
Yeah. Well, Shaughnessy does do that, and that's pretty amazing, all things considered, because he doesn't pull any punches. He doesn't sugarcoat anything.
No, and there was a guy that wrote for the Herald at one time, John Tomas.
Oh, yeah.
Who he wrote that story about the Patriots stealing signals from the Rams before the Super Bowl, which turned out to be totally false. Remember?
Yep.
And he showed up after that thing broke, and Randy Moss dressed him down in front of an entire conference room full of people.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have wanted to be him that day.
No. No, and there's some big people in that room, if there's football players in there. Jeez. All right, Tim, did you go through your list, Tim?
Only halfway.
Oh, okay, well, let Steve react to your next one.
Basketball, I thought of two guys. Both former players, one a player from a long time ago, but always an interesting character. Lenny Wilkins.
I didn't deal with him that much. Nice guy, though, when I did. He was with Seattle. Yeah.
And then from the battle with the Boston Celtics, Larry Costello.
Oh, it's from the Bucks?
Yep.
I don't think I ever met him, but he was okay. From those 70s teams, I kind of liked Red Holtzman from the Knicks. He was a wild man, you know?
I was just going to say, he was the New York version of Earl Weaver.
Yeah, he was. I ran into him during that great 73 series, you know, when the Knicks came back and beat him in seven. And he was very passionate about his basketball.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
All right, boys. Any other thoughts there, Steve, before we let you go?
No. I just wanted to say I appreciate both of you guys coming yesterday. It was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, we didn't address hockey, which is fine with me because I can't think of one hockey coach.
I can give you one, all right? I've got one. Scotty Bowman.
I wrote that down.
He was my favorite.
Scotty Bowman.
Nine Stanley Cups, most wins in the NHL ever, and he coached four different teams. He also became an executive, and on top of all of that, from all accounts, he was a very nice guy with the media.
Yeah. He coached for the Montreal Canadiens.
He did. He did, and I'll tell you, for me to put
Steve
that on there wasn't easy.
Him out.
Hmm?
Leaves him out.
Nope. Can't do it. Nope, you got to respect, and especially when the team is better than you are, and they were.
They were just nauseating.
Oh, I know.
And they still are, by the way.
Of course, you're not.
I hate them more than I hate the Yankees. So.
Good. All right. I like that. All right, Steve, we will let you go, and thank you for yesterday, and thank you for today, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. We're going to take, obviously, the next two Mondays off.
Yeah. All right. Take care, Rick.
Merry Christmas, Steve. Take care.
Merry Christmas to the both of you. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah.
And to Mike, too.
Bye.
Very good. All right, Tim. Let's see if we can get Mike on here a minute or two early. We'll take a break. Again, I've got no high school hockey, no high school scores at all so far on the scoreboard. I've been looking everywhere. And, again, Hamilton, Wenham, and Linfield high schools have both postponed all of their athletic events until tomorrow due to the weather today. So they'll all be playing tomorrow. And I'm going to look for some more scores later on after the program and see what we can post. And so, stay tuned. Check out MSO News Sports from time to time. And Bill, of course, once again, Bill Newell, working with the Salem News sports writers, putting together their Salem News sports podcast. It's a Zoom cast that'll be shown tomorrow on MSO News Sports and the Salem News. And that's with Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, and Nick Giannis, and, of course, Bill Newell. Okay, we'll take a break and be back. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. So hang in there.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, and I have to finish up something that I started with Steve Krause, and Steve said to say hi, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm going to run all these names by you, and then I'm going to give you one more because I do have another hockey coach. My hockey coach is Scotty Bowman. I just think he was the best coach on earth, even though he did coach Montreal for a number of years. Nine Stanley Cups and the most wins in NHL history. But these are the names that the boys have tossed around so far.
Okay, good. Yeah, go ahead.
Earl Weaver, Walt Alston, yeah. Vince Lombardi.
Earl Weaver, go ahead.
Bud Grant, Bill Parcells, Marv Levy, I can't see what I wrote on that one, Tom Coughlin, Ralph Houk, I can't read that. Oh, Joe Morgan, Lenny Wilkens. Yes. And these weren't all favorites. We got off into discussions of good guys. Lenny Wilkens, Larry Costello, and Red Holtzman.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to give you one more, and then I'll let you and Tim duke it out.
Yeah.
Another hockey coach, and I don't know if you've even ever heard of him. And my other two, by the way, are basketball coaches. I didn't get into baseball or football at all. But Ben Smith of Gloucester.
Yeah, oh,
is
yeah, sure.
One of my all-time favorite coaches. A Harvard player under Cooney Weiland. He was a Gloucester High School coach, a Yale assistant, a BU assistant, a Dartmouth head coach. He also coached, he was the assistant for the U.S. Men's Olympic hockey team. And then, obviously, his glory was the women's Olympic hockey team when they had their very first Olympic hockey team. In 98, they win the gold. In 02, they win the silver. And in 06, they get the bronze. And to this day, he's a little bit older than I am. And to this day, boys, he's still volunteering coaching Gloucester school kids. And obviously, he's in the United States Hockey Hall of Fame. So Ben Smith is just all, you know, he's a Gloucester kid, one of my favorites.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a fantastic choice. Not many people would think of that one. So that's a superb selection.
Thank you. All right. You and Tim, tee it up.
Okay, well, listen, I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys, and I'm going to start with a local coach, a high school coach, because he had such an impact on the North Shore and the Salem News coverage, and that was Bishop Fenwick's Ed Henry, who was the softball coach from 1983 to 97, okay? We just were fascinated by what he could do with his team from year to year. He won 8 state championships in 15 years. And get this, his overall record was 332 wins and 26 losses.
Oh, my.
And get this, in the state tournament play in all those years, 62-7.
Wow.
That's you got to remember, sometimes a team will have a dynasty for 3 or 4 years or 5 years, but this guy did it for 15. And the thing that stood out about him in terms of our coverage at the Salem News was, he was a cutting-edge coach back in the 80s and 90s in terms of he created fundamentals that had not been produced before to become like, for Bishop Fenwick to become a great team every year. In other words, he worked the girls hard on fundamentals, but he also made the game fun because he had a great sense of humor. And the athletes that they had, it's not that they were superb athletes at Bishop Fenwick, but he made them great softball players because of the various tricks of the trade that he knew, okay? And he made the game fun for them, and also he made them psychological warriors. By that I mean the buses would pull in for a state tournament, and there would be all kinds of signs on the bus, like Bishop Fenwick will not be beaten, or they would be, you know, slapping their hands on the bus. They were intimidating even getting off the bus. So I remember coaches saying to me, we were beaten even before the first pitch was tossed, you know, like because they knew how to play the game on the field and in terms of preparation. He had those girls so well prepared. I think his legacy, too, was the fact that so many of the girls who played at Bishop Fenwick went on to become high school coaches, college players. So he had quite a coaching tree with many branches, and we just loved him at the Salem News because even though he did all that, he had the game in perspective. He was a part of the staff at Bishop Fenwick. He taught there. And I will remember I was still working at the Salem News when he passed away from cancer. I remember him telling me one night on the phone when he was diagnosed with cancer. He said, Mike, he said, this cancer thing is overrated. In other words, he wanted to conquer the disease. And I know he took some non-traditional medications because, you know, he didn't want to, he went through chemo and all that, and it wasn't working. So I think he flew down to Florida, and he took some non-traditional medications and all that, and he passed away much too young. And on the night that he passed away, interestingly enough, a whole bunch of his ex-players came to his house, because I believe he passed away at home, and a couple of them called me that night and said, Mike, we're losing Ed. It was Ed Bud was his nickname, Ed Bud Henry. And he said, we're losing him. Are you guys going to do something on it? Are you going to write a story? Of course, I said, of course we're going to write a story. But he was beloved by his players, even as those players got into their 20s and 30s. They followed the team. They kept in touch with him, and he kept in touch with them. And I can remember USA Today, which was a national newspaper, as you guys know, started keeping like a top 20 softball teams in the country. But Bishop, you know, it came after Bishop Fenwick won a state title. So I swear to God, I remember looking up some things on, he didn't have the internet back then, but I tried to look up national things, other teams that might have had as good a run as Bishop Fenwick did. And there was a team in South Carolina that dominated down at that particular state. But for me, Bishop Fenwick was the ultimate high school team, high school power. And it didn't matter what was boys' sports or girls' sports. This guy just a legendary coach who did some great things with high school athletes. So that was a guy that I thought of immediately when you gave me that assignment.
Great story, Mike. Great story. Tim, are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. You know,
I'm not either. That's awesome. We should have known about that. That's tremendous.
Well, he did it. You know, there was a stretch of years when I think he won like six straight titles. Wow. We're talking the mid.
Oh yeah, no. It was about, you know, some of the details I was a little lacking on.
Yeah. But, you know, 332 and 26, and I got to tell you, the quality of softball back then was very good. They used to face some outstanding teams from the South Shore and Central Mass and all that in the state tournament. And there were some close games, a lot of 1-0 games, 2-1 games, because the pitching was outstanding, okay? And Bishop Fenwick was a tremendous defensive team. They hardly ever allowed any runs. So the reason they won was because he gave Bishop Fenwick an edge with his coaching techniques. And, you know, just got to admire a guy like that who also cared deeply about the kids, who was at Bishop Fenwick every day as a staff member, faculty member. And, you know, 332 wins and 26 losses. Wow. I mean, it's just an unbelievable strength that he had. And it's just a long run of championships. So that was my high school guy. And then Tim and Rick, you may want to comment. There's two other guys that I thought of right off the bat here. One was, of course, my lifelong love of Notre Dame football, Ara Parseghian.
I thought of that, yep.
Ara Parseghian, Tim and Rick, you know, coached starting in 1964 through 75. And at that point, when he took over the program, they had like five straight losing seasons, and he went on to win two national championships, came close to a third one, and he had a record of like 94-17-2 or something like that. And the championships came in 1966 and 73, and I can still remember watching on New Year's Eve when they beat Alabama 24-23 in the 72-73 season. In other words, the 72 season extended into 73 with the bowl games. And they were leading 24-23 late in the game. Alabama had them pinned on their own 4 or 5 yard line, and the clock wasn't going to run out. Notre Dame needed to get a first down, and everyone thought they'd play conservative and run the ball on third down. But Clement, the quarterback, threw a pass to Tom Gatewood. For some reason, I remember that, even from 50 years ago. They got the first down, right, Tim? And they were able to close out that game with a 24-23 win. And he just had a great career. He's considered in that holy trinity of coaches at Notre Dame. Newt Rockne, Frank Leahy, and Ara Parseghian. Mm-hmm. So they had great winning percentages. They won national titles. They brought Notre Dame to national prominence. So he's a guy that I thought of immediately. So let me bounce that one off you.
I totally agree. You know, I think Notre Dame football, the first name I think about is Ara Parseghian. And, you know, you think back, that was a time where, you know, we're teenagers and you're really beginning to pay a little bit of attention to college sports. And here's Notre Dame, and you're a good Catholic kid, and Notre Dame sports, period, and Notre Dame itself, the college, is like heaven on earth to a good Catholic kid. And there's Ara Parseghian, you know, he just looked so good walking the sideline.
He sure did, didn't he? Yeah.
He was the classiest looking individual walking that sideline at Notre Dame, you know. He could have been a professional model.
I agree. And you know, Tim, 11 years later, he retired basically from Notre Dame because he was physically and mentally exhausted trying to keep up. Even back then in the 60s, like you said, we were teenagers, so we were impressionable. It was great to see a guy like that coaching a team like that to success. So we were impressionable, so a guy like that made a deep and strong impression on us watching the games on TV. And, Tim, the game that you and I and maybe Rick will also remember is that 1966 Michigan State game, which turned into a 10-10, or was it 0-0, 10-10 tie, I believe. And everyone said Notre Dame should not have played for the tie, but he knew that the tie would be good enough to keep him in the number one spot. And then the following week, they went out to Southern Cal, and they beat them 51-0, okay? Yeah. And that kind of secured the national championship for them. And, you know, so it was actually a brilliant move to play for the tie because he knew they were still in a position to win the national title. But when he came aboard, Tim, I guess one of the things he did was he talked to all the players about, okay, what's wrong with this program? How can we make it better? We want to be a winning program, but I want your input. I think he was open-minded, you know, talking about the 60s and all that, and there was a lot of, that was the days of the Haight-Ashbury and all the hippies and all that stuff. But he really had an open mind about listening to players and making a solid program that would be sustainable for a long period of time. And he was he left his imprint, that's for sure, because when you're mentioned with Newt Rockne and Frank Leahy, now 50, 55, 56 years later, that's pretty good company to keep.
That's fantastic, and I didn't get into that until long after the fact, because when I was going through what you guys were going through, I was watching Darryl Royal, Bear Bryant, Bud Wilkinson. I was watching that area in there because I lived down there. So those are the guys I know of, and we didn't get to see those Notre Dame games very often.
Right, and of course, Tim, just the opposite, I guess, even though he had a great winning record, Woody Hayes, I'm not picking him as one of my favorites, I still have that image of him punching a Clemson player in a bowl game. One of the most it caught on national TV. A Clemson player went out of bounds into the Ohio State sideline, and the head coach of Ohio State punched him. Okay? Now, today, that would be all over the internet and all over social media, and he would have been fired like 2 hours later. But back then, I guess it was anything goes. He was just the opposite, I thought, of Arapasijan.
Well, Bobby Knight got away with all that stuff, too.
Oh, sure, he did. He sure did. And you know, the funny thing, one additional note on Arapasijan, he was Presbyterian, and a lot of the Catholics in the area, and especially in Chicago area, Notre Dame area, they didn't want a non-Catholic coach. And that was an issue back then in 1964.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Religion was an issue, and some people did not want him installed as the coach because he was a non-Catholic.
Well, I remember, you know, you talk about that, my ex-brother-in-law was Protestant, and he went to B.C.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, hey, how did you get into B.C.? And a good neighbor, who was a very good friend of the family, was a B.C. grad, and he was a good Catholic.
Yeah,
and he managed to talk. He's
taking
it from Dobbins, who had a hell of a career there. But it was funny. The players at the Catholic schools, you know, if the kid can play, you can be any religion you want. You know,
yep.
Doesn't matter. We'll just wink, wink, nod, nod. you know, Arrowhead was just such an individual. I remember the Notre Dame, the Michigan State game, because my dad invited one of his coworkers over to our house on that Saturday to watch because he was a massive Notre Dame fan.
Yep.
You know, and that's, I don't remember any other watching any other college game while I was at that particular age, but I remember that one because it brought my dad's buddy from work over to the house.
Yep. But, yeah, it's funny that religion would be an issue. I mean, today the people would laugh that off. I mean, you hire a head coach, he's around for 2 years, and he takes a better job. But back then, it was an issue in the hiring process. But at that point, Notre Dame had suffered some 5 straight losing seasons, and attendance was declining, and they wanted – and, of course, Ara had coached at Northwestern, I believe, just before that, and there had been a poor team, and I think he went like 25-24 or something like that. And for those, that was good enough. In other words, he had turned around a moribund program at Northwestern into at least a winning type of team, a competitive team. And Notre Dame felt, this guy's a good coach. So they hired him over Dan Devine, who became the coach that succeeded Arapasijan in 1975 or 76. So, ironically, you know, they were considering Devine back in the mid-60s, and they turned to Arapasijan. And Arapasijan actually called Father, I forget who was in charge at that point, but he was looking for a coaching job, and he actually called Notre Dame to see if they had an opening because they were considering other people.
All right, can I...
So they called him back and said, you're our guy.
Can I move you off Notre Dame now?
Yes.
No. I want to get your response to my next one, and then we'll go back.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The first name, Tim and Mike. The first name that came into my mind on this assignment was John Wooden.
Oh, beautiful choice.
And I never watched college basketball much, but I certainly read about John Wooden. And I guess, first of all, he's a philosopher. I looked him up online. There are so many sayings that are just incredible that he's got. That's locker room material. But listen to this. He had four 30-0 seasons. Four of them. 30-0.
Totally absurd. Yeah.
He won 88 straight at one point.
Yep.
38 straight in the NCAA tournaments.
Yep.
What was the other one? 10 times national champion. 10 times. He was 6 times coach of the year, and he won 20 Pac-10 championships. But the thing that most amazed me was his post-career relationship with players and student athletes. And apparently, this guy was, a genuinely nice man who inspired people and knew basketball.
Oh, there's no question. Rick, do you remember any of those famous sayings? Because I have one famous saying from him that I remember off the top of my head. Can you throw a couple at me that you remember?
Sure. Well, I've got them right here in front of me. One is, okay. A mistake is valuable if you do 4 things with it. Recognize it. Admit it, learn from it, forget it.
Okay.
Then he's got one, I'll give you another, I got 1,000 of it.
Yep.
Be more concerned with your character than your reputation.
Okay.
Your character is what you really are. Your reputation is merely what others think you are.
Oh, that's a beautiful one.
Isn't it?
Tim, do you like those too?
A wiser man couldn't have said that any better.
Oh my goodness. Right. I read these and it's like, here's another one. Do not let what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. So simple.
Okay.
This is the last one that I'll get back to you. Champions never complain. They are too busy getting better.
Oh, I love those. he was definitely one of a kind and still revered by his former players. And here's my famous saying from John Wooden that I remember off the top of my head. William, you're going to get a haircut. Bill Walton.
I know who that was.
Yes. Bill Walton had the long hair. And there's no way, because he was living in those late 60s, and he was a kind of hippie attitude and all that, and he had a mind of his own, and he was going to stand out. And he had the long hair, and he basically wasn't going to get it cut. And then he went to practice one day, and Wooden said to him, William, you're going to get a haircut, or you will not be on this team. And William went out and got a haircut. And to this day, as you know, Walton still talks about that. And he, of course, adores Wooden and the years that he had at UCLA.
Oh, yes.
Here's another one.
Can I have just a moment? I want to get a program and roll it up.
Yeah.
All right, one more. And then
think of Fred Wooden on the sideline.
Okay.
He's got that rolled up program.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it
yeah. And he was always looking like so scholarly on the sidelines. Yep. Well, he had the glasses on and he had like a suit coat on, right, most of the time. So
yep.
he looked like a professor.
Yes, he did. Well, he was a professor of hardwood out there, that's for sure.
No question. Go ahead, Rick, fire away.
There's so many of them. They're so good. Things turn out best for the people who make the best out of the way things turn out.
I love that.
I mean, it's crazy. And
how did he create those? I mean, did he come up with those on his own? That's amazing stuff.
Here's another one. A player who makes a team great is better than a great player. Huh?
Oh, I love that.
How many times have we alluded to that? There's a million of them. And it's like, my God, this man was brilliant. So simple. I mean, these are just simple things that you would think everybody would have thought of.
Well, can you send those to Joe Mazzulla?
anonymously, maybe.
Yeah. No, I think even a guy like Mazzulla, being a young guy, probably doesn't know much about John Wooden. He would probably appreciate hearing some of these things if they haven't been pointed out to him.
Here's one,
in
Tim.
Lifetime.
Tim, this is a math teacher. This could have been a math teacher. The 8 laws of learning are explanation, demonstration, imitation, repetition, 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 repetition.
I love that.
All right, who else you got?
He was a great coach. Go ahead.
Well, the last one I have, I don't want to hold up. The last one I have is Mike Krzyzewski. Coach K is one of my all-time favorites. I love watching him and love watching his teams. And the best thing, I remember there was a writer, Derek, for the Globe, who used to publish all the time, Derek Z. Jackson. He used to publish the graduation rates of all the colleges.
Oh, yes.
And Duke, 98% graduation rate among its players to this day, including transfers and those who leave early for the NBA.
Wow, that's probably the best way you can explain what he's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Are you what? No, it's not ready anymore. Okay.
Who are we talking about?
That's a great one.
Yeah, anyway, those are mine.
Well, I'm going to throw one more at you, and then we can get some Celtic stuff. And I'll do this one real quick.
Yep.
Because I had, Mike Bray, Notre Dame basketball coach. Now, Notre Dame's not a basketball power, but they regularly won 20 games when he was there. And I had the pleasure of dealing with him when Pat Connaughton of St. John's Prep decided to go there, and he was there from 2011 through 2015. And so I would cover the occasional Notre Dame when they played UConn or when they played BC. And, of course, I went to the NCAA tournament in 2015. And even though I dealt with an assistant coach who knew Connaughton really well, Mike Bray, I dealt with him enough where he, at the end of Connaughton's career, he sent me a note at the Salem News personally thanking me for coverage of Notre Dame basketball and the relationship that I had with Connaughton. He just went out of his way. Sometimes I would actually, even on big national games, if I was there, he would go out of his way, and I would have a one-on-one with him.
Wow.
Because I would be able to talk about Connaughton and his contributions to the team. So, to me, that's an extraordinary thing for a modern-day coach, because they deal with so much media, you know, print, TV, you know, everything, and they usually don't have time for one-on-ones. But this guy was able to do that in the years that I covered, you know, Connaughton at Notre Dame. And he sent me a note of thank you from his own office. It was just a really great feeling that he would take the time to do that for nobody like me. So that's why I have him certainly among my favorite coaches.
Yeah, that's a great story. I feel that way, Mike, and I'm not blowing smoke here, but almost every time I talk to a high school coach who gives they give the time, you know, their time for me to talk with them and ask my silly questions or out of ignorance or whatever, but they do it, and they do it primarily, I'm guessing, and I'm again guessing, but they do it because of their love of the game and their love of the kids. But
yes,
I feel absolutely the same way on a much smaller level, but I know exactly what you're talking about. It's an honor, and it's humbling as well.
Yep, no doubt about it. So we've had the good fortune of dealing with so many, you know, because we've been around for a couple thousand years, we've had the good fortune of dealing with so many good people, good coaches. And like, you know, like you mentioned on a national level, guys like John Wooden and Ara Parseghian. And Tim, who did you have, Tim?
My list included, and I just removed it from my pile of stuff here. I had Lenny Holtzman. Lenny Wilkins.
Lenny Wilkins, Providence College.
And for college?
No, I'm saying Providence College guy.
Oh, yeah. Remember that. Bad of me. And Larry Costello. Enjoyed watching those guys work.
Yep.
I had Bud Grant from football.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the classy guys, just the way they conducted themselves in a sideline.
Sure.
I had Earl Weaver, which Steve had, his number one. Earl was the first one that came to my mind but the Orioles were always my favorite team growing up as a kid. They were my second favorite after the Red Sox.
Yeah,
it was always a blue collar town.
No question.
But like the Red Sox, and they played really good fundamental baseball, especially back there in the '60s when they had those great teams with the pitching staff but you could, you know, I could name everybody in the Orioles starting lineup. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
Right after Red Sox, I could name the Orioles. For hockey, I had Scotty Bowman that they had. Baseball, besides Earl, I had Walter Alston.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Another standout figure and a real gentleman.
Yeah, you know, and I said he would have been perfect in the age when the managers wore suits.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? You
could even in a baseball uniform, he looked distinguished in baseball uniform.
Exactly. You know, he could be there in the suit and the fedora and not look out of place.
Yep. Yep, you know? I totally agree. Those are good choices.
I would not want to see Earl Weaver in a suit.
No. You'd have Earl Weaver, like, smoking a cigarette, which I used to see him do at Fenway Park, behind the batting cage. He'd be smoking before a game and answering reporters' questions, and then he'd be spitting, onto the dirt. So you're right. He wouldn't be in a suit, but he was definitely a baseball man all the way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No doubt. Those are guys.
Yeah, those are great choices, Tim.
These are all good, and I love the personal stories, Mike. That's what makes it so great. All right, so we got about 5 minutes if you want to give your latest Celtic summary.
You know what? Here's what I did, Rick. I want to do, I did some homework today, so I thought it was time to catch up on our former Celtics and how they're doing at this point.
Even better,
the way
okay.
into the season, okay?
Yep, good.
And then comparing with the guys that the Celtics replaced them with, all right?
So I love it.
It could be pretty quick here. We just like last time, we'll start with Grant Williams. He's been a starter with the Dallas Mavericks, and he's played 22 of 25 games. He's having a very good season. He's got a career-high 9.7 points while playing about 27, 28 minutes a game. He's shooting 42% overall, 39% on three. So he's been a very useful player for a Dallas team that's, 5 or 6 games over 500. So he's been contributing on a regular basis, and he's been a good soldier. And I haven't seen any video of him arguing with officials and all that stuff. So I guess he's being the type of player they want him to be. So that's him, okay? Then we go to Robert Williams, and I just got to mention 6 games, so it means he's going to miss 76 games. So poor Robert Williams, injuries continue to plague him, and he's got another lost season. Marcus Smart, Memphis Grizzlies. He got off to a terrific start. He's had a foot sprain for a month now, Rick. He's been out for a month. And he's played only 11 of the 24 games. He's averaging like 12.5 points a game. He's shooting 42% from the floor and only 29% on threes, which probably doesn't surprise too many Celtics fans.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he'll be an important cog in their future when he does come back. I think he was ruled out for 3 to 5 weeks. Well, he's getting towards the 5-week mark, so maybe he'll be back around Christmas time or New Year's. But so he's had a limited effect on that team because this is also missing Ja Morant, so they badly need Marcus Smart. But unfortunately, he's not been injury-prone in his career, but this season he's missed 13 of their 24 games. And Malcolm Brogdon, Rick, one of our favorite players when he's with the Celtics, he's played 18 of a possible 25 games with Portland, and he's averaging, even though he's new team, new system, he's still averaging 15.6 points per game. He's shooting 41% overall, 38% on threes. And he's having a good season, but he's missed a few games with injuries. So that's the wrap-up on the 4 guys, the 4 big guns they lost in the offseason. So what do you think of what their progress so far?
Well, I want to hear what you think because it seems to me that the replacements have come through more than those guys have if they were still here.
That's right. And that's a perfect segue, Rick, because I look at Jrue Holiday. Played 23 of 25 games. He missed a couple of games. That's it. He's averaging 12.5 points a game, which is about what, Marcus Smart is averaging. But, however, Jrue Holiday doesn't take many shots because he knows that, you're going to have Jaylen Brown has to get his points and his shots and Jason Tatum and Porzingis. And so he's been a perfect in that role. So he's shooting, but overall he's shooting 45% and 39% on threes, which is very good. And get this, he's also shooting 82% on free throws, which is better than any of the players that I've mentioned so far.
Wow.
So he's been the best free throw shooter until I looked up the next guy, Porzingis, who's missed, Ricky, last week you were concerned he had missed 3 or 4 games in a row. Well, he ended up missing 4 games, and he sat out a game or two. I think it was basically they didn't want to tweak it, his injury, so he sat out another game. But he's averaging 18.9 to be exact. He's shooting 52% from the floor. He's only shooting 33% from threes, but we know that'll bump up, I think. And he's shooting 83% from the foul line, which is even a little bit better than Jrue Holiday. So like you said, the 2 guys that have replaced the 4 guys that are gone have played in a majority of the Celtics games. They've had a huge impact on winning. And when you add Porzingis' 19 points to Jaylen Brown's 20-something points and Jason Tatum's 26, 27 points, there's a lot of effective offense there that they've gained with Porzingis and Holiday, because Holiday is primarily the distributor most of the way.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you watch Porzingis shoot foul shots, and he's so tall when he puts his, when he extends to shoot foul shots, he's throwing it down, downhill.
Yep.
He's halfway there.
Yeah. So those two impacts, just like what you said, Rick, those two players that the Celtics acquired, certainly, you know, they've kept the team up there as the best team in the NBA, obviously.
Well, final question.
Final
question I have for you, and then I'll let Tim finish it up. The rotation now. Let's have a critique of the bench and the rotation.
Well, Al Horford has surprised me in the sense that, like, he's been so good at hitting shots and defending. He's still a premium defender at his age, 37. Of course, it's great when he can come off the bench and play only, let's say, 22, 23, 24 minutes as opposed to starting. But it's a seamless transition if Porzingis is sitting out or somebody else is sitting out. He's been tremendous, I think, as a sixth man or a starter. And Peyton Pritchard, of course, the other night he knocks down like 7 threes.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I think he's been really good at times. You can't play him against every team because certain teams are too big for him and he's a little guy. But I think Mazzulla has found the best way to use him. He'll play a lot of minutes against certain teams and he won't play a lot of minutes against certain teams. So he's been really good. And Sam Hauser, who, you know, we had our doubts about in the offseason, is shooting like 46% on threes. And there was a story that I read today that he's working on his two-point shots. In other words, so that he can be a better all-around player, not just be covered on three-point shots. He wants to be able to drive to the basket and hit that medium-range jumper, and he's working on that consistently. But some of the threes he's been making off the catch and shoot, he releases the ball so quickly. To me, he's been a tremendous weapon as a sixth, seventh, eighth guy. Doesn't matter. When he comes in, he has an impact on the game. You know, he's got that stroke going. He can hit six or seven in a game.
What about the other guys?
Which one?
On the bench. Contributors, any?
Okay, well, O'Shea, none of those guys has impressed me personally. Brissett, Cornette has been okay once in a while. They have that other big man. It gets a little shady or foggy after that eighth man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
After Hauser, let's say if you're talking Al Horford coming off the bench, he's a sixth man, and Hauser's a seventh man, and Peyton Pritchard's the eighth man. After that, I think you could throw a blanket over them. No one has stood out.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Yeah, you know, going back to the guys that we traded away and the guys we brought in, you know, sports today is really, what have you done for me lately?
Yes.
And the guys that we picked up, they've done a lot for us lately. The guys that they brought in, the guys that we expected to make a difference or to contribute, have done just that. You know, the last four guys on the bench, I still don't know their names. I see them come in and I go, oh, when do we have that guy? Yeah, but you can watch them go out there, and they're playing their asses off out there. I mean, they're running, they're diving. You know, they're going to the hoop, they're chasing down rebounds. These guys want to be part of whatever it is that they have this year. And they're hungry to be part of it, to make whatever contribution they can, so that if it doesn't work out here in Boston, it's going to work out with them somewhere else, and someone's going to go. Because it's like the old Patriots. Anybody got cut from the Patriots, immediately got signed by somebody else and played.
That's right, you know? That's right. That's a great point, Tim. And I think because they're championship-driven, meaning the guys like Tatum and Brown, Drew Holiday, who certainly has been around, 33 years old, and he won a title with Milwaukee a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. They're championship-driven. So the guys who are at the end of the bench, they want, like you said, they're going to hustle and fight like crazy because they want to be a part of a championship-driven team. And they can have their names attached to Larry O'Brien trophy for the championship. It's sort of like the Stanley Cup, having your name attached to that. Even if they play a bit part, they want to play a good bit part.
All right, guys. Oh, I have one score in girls basketball. Newburyport 57, Ipswich 19. That's the only score we have. I just sent both of you guys some John Wooden quotes, so check them out when you get a chance.
I will.
except I sent it to the wrong address because I'm trying to do two things at once, and I can't do that, so I'll resend it. But anyway, Mike and Tim, obviously we're taking the next 2 weeks off, so I want to wish you and Eileen and all your family and friends a great holiday, Merry Christmas, and thank you so much. Sharing those personal stories about your interaction with coaches and players, that's what makes this so cool.
It's a lot of fun to recount that stuff, and Tim, I know you have some great stories as well, and I think we can hopefully relate that to our audience because, you know, we've met a lot of people.
we have met over the course of our lifetime.
Right. And Rick, well, late Celtics, you know, note, as we head into the holiday season, which we hope everyone has a great holiday, the Celtics now hit the road, and they play the Golden State Warriors on the road Tuesday night. And I'm breathing a sigh of relief because Draymond Green probably won't be around to take a punch at somebody and knock out Jason Tatum accidentally. You know, I think that's a good thing going into the holiday season that we don't have to worry about Draymond Green.
That's a good point.
Merry Christmas to us all.
Yes.
Amen.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Be well. See you in a few weeks.
Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Mike. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Okay.
You too.
All right. Oh, my goodness. Those personal stories, man. Among the three of you guys, we've got half the globe covered, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. You're home for the holidays, I presume.
We are home for the holidays, yep.
Well, do enjoy and be safe, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All righty, my friend. You enjoy.
Merry Christmas.
My best to the family.
Same, right back at you. Thank you, Tim. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
That's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst and ambassador of goodwill. So that's it. Merry Christmas. Be well, be safe, and do the right thing.